If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. You're with Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, you better believe it. It's Thursday, the 28th, is that? 28th, yeah. Yeah, 28th of March, 2024. This is TNT, today's News Talk. I'm Rick Munn, the hostess with the mostess, and we've got an action-packed show for you here today, as you would expect, with a station called TNT. Some call it Today's News Talk, others refer to it as trinitrotoluene, which is, of course, the chemical formation for dynamite, explosive. That's what we're all about here today. So whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, and whatever you're doing, we hope it's nice. Enjoy the show. Leave your thoughts, comments, and opinions in the live chat, which can be found on tntradio.live, just to give you a little sampler. Oh, by the way, Gemma, unfortunately, her little dog is extremely ill today, so she's had to take him to the vet emergency thing this morning, so she won't be doing any news bulletins today. Basil is stepping in to cover her for today only. Hopefully she'll be back in action tomorrow morning, so hopefully everything goes okay with her little dog. What have we got on today? Well, I have Nadia Clock joining me at around about 20 past the hour here this morning. She is the London Secretary for the Workers' Party of Great Britain, and of course they're making great strides at the minute with recruiting potential election candidates. I want to look at the manifesto for the Workers' Party, see what she has to say about that, what they're really all about. All we're hearing is these headline news of George Galloway's victory in Rochdale. A lot of people are interested in the party, but what are they all about? Hopefully get to the bottom of that one with her in about 20 minutes time. Basil will be joining me towards the end of the hour to round up some UK political issues. And in the second hour, I'm going to be joined by two very special guests. First of all, Neil McAvoy, who is the leader of Propel Wales. He'll be coming back on here. He's been on once before to talk about what's happening in Wales at this point in time. And then Joe Allen. Oh, Joe's an absolute dynamo. He will be joining me from Tennessee towards the end of the second hour. He's going to be talking about the book that he wrote, Dark Aeon, fantastic book on transhumanism and AI. Going to be digging into what's happening there at the world of deep fakery, artificial intelligence, etc. So you can stay tuned for that one. And of course, throughout the course of the day, there'd be a lot of other great hosts and presenters bringing fantastic content to you on the one and only TNT. So before Basil comes in to do some headlines, just some that I'm looking at myself here this morning. Paul Frew, who is a politician here in Northern Ireland for the DUP, he has highlighted the fact that the BBC are now calling out harms that were done during lockdown, especially to children, vulnerable children in abusive homes that weren't properly monitored and properly looked after during the lockdown years. Paul says, at the time I called out deaths that would be caused by lockdowns, the media, particularly the BBC, tried to sensationalize my words, ridicule me. Then they started to ignore me when the evidence was simply too difficult to mock. The BBC needs to reflect on the role that they played in pushing lockdowns. And this is in response to a post from a certain professor, Lucy Easthope, said, hard to watch BBC News tonight when it links a number of brutal child deaths and calls out the role played by lockdown and social work management decisions to allow missed appointments and online visits. And let's not forget, the BBC are the government's propaganda arm. They were pushing for lockdowns and supporting them as hard as just about anybody else. They have a very, very short memory. So lest they forget, we will not let them wriggle off that particular hook. We will continue to call them out until something is done about their shenanigans and their skullduggery. Lastly, a severe hailstorm has destroyed large parts of a massive solar farm in Texas, highlighting the perils of swapping traditional power sources for vulnerable green alternatives. And this story goes on to say that thousands upon thousands of solar panels have been completely destroyed by golf ball sized hailstones that were falling in Texas, smashed these units to pieces. Now there's chemical leaks into the ground. The locals are worried about the water table being polluted and affected. How are they going to dispose of all these solar panels? Will they be going to landfill? And all this does is echo the East Palestine horror that happened in Ohio, I believe, believe it was, around about last February time, when there was a derailment, a lot of toxins got into the environment. And guess what? No one seemed to give a damn. Biden didn't even visit the site. So I would say, if you're an American and there's a natural or a disaster happening in your area, toxic pollution, chemical pollution, look at the fires that happened in Hawaii last year as well. It's the same thing. The government don't give a damn unless it suits them. So don't expect any relief in that respect from Biden's administration. So just a few things to get the ball rolling here this morning. This is TNT, and our political editor Basil Valentine is waiting in the wings to hop on to chew the fat on what's happening here in the UK. Don't go away. This is TNT.
Keeping the commitment 24/7.
I come to you for facts. I really appreciate what you and your team do.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Basil, you made a comment this morning in our little group chat, which made me chuckle. I must admit, I needed a little laugh this morning. You said, because of Gemma's absence, you're stepping into the breach to fill her shoes. And your comment was, it's a pesto day extra, Basil. I like that one. And I'm not going to complain about that one this morning myself.
Yep, absolutely. We're heavy on the Basil day today. It's a pesto morning here in Britain. And we are facing what can only be called a water crisis, Rick. Shareholders in Thames Water are withholding funding for the superannuation scheme. And this means that bills are going to have to go up. Shareholders are demanding that Thames Water users' bills go up before they provide any of the additional funding required for critical infrastructure upgrades to prevent yet more sewage being dumped in our rivers. Compare and contrast with the announcement as well in the last day or two that the boss of British Gas is going to have his pay increased to an eye-watering £8 million a year. Chris O'Shea, who sports a Delingpole-esque handlebar moustache. He looks more like some sort of comedy conjurer than the CEO of a utility company. His pay last year was £8.2 million, up from £4.4 million, according to the firm's annual report. This consists of a basic salary of £810,000 a year, a £1.4 million annual bonus, and a £5.9 million long-term bonus, pension and benefits. Apparently, he told the BBC himself, his pay is impossible to justify. Well, why doesn't he decide, therefore, to forego the vast majority of it and perhaps give it back to some of the people paying the bills that contribute to his, you know, ridiculous remuneration package?
You know what, listening to you talk there, I'm thinking, Basil, I'm in the wrong business. As I dwell in the twilight of my career, I got into the hot air business. I'm now in the hot air business. It looks like getting into the gas business would have certainly paid me a little bit more. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, these salaries, of course, completely out of all proportion to what the chap actually contributes to the economy. British Gas now also supply electricity. They're one of the sort of multiplicity of energy providers in Britain. But it's worth remembering that British Gas was publicly owned 30 years ago. It was one of the first utilities to be privatised. Do you remember the Tell Sid campaign?
I do remember that. Yeah,
we were all supposed to be stakeholders. Well, in fact, all that's happened is that private equity firms and even sovereign wealth funds have ended up owning what used to be our utilities. An absolute disaster. It's a swindle. That's the best word for it. Rick, the British public have been swindled out of their national assets.
Yeah, here's the thing too, with regards to these remuneration packages, you know, chief executives obviously are going to try and justify what they're being paid here, but there's nobody is worth that amount of money. And when you think that the customers, especially the customers of British Gas or Centrica, I think, own British Gas at the moment, they've done extremely well. Their share price has done extremely well over the last few years. They're paying a good dividend payments as well. That's obviously going into the pockets of the shareholders, but it's at the expense of the customers because the gas bills are rising like crazy. And of course, we know they're a business, Basil. We know they're out to make money. We know they're a corporate entity and they want to try and make the balance sheet look as attractive as possible. However, that's not to say that, you know, a little bit of profiteering could be sacrificed, especially when their loyal customers are the ones that are effectively propping them up at the minute and paying indirectly these exorbitant salaries.
I mean, billions have been offshored from Thames Water and Southern Water to shareholders. Literally billions of pounds coming from people paying their bills in good faith so that they can flush the toilet and turn the tap on every day. Now it seems there is the distinct possibility that Thames Water could be placed into special administration, which would result in the government stepping in and temporarily renationalising the company. Surely that would be the biggest indictment of privatisation yet. And why only temporary renationalisation? You know, if it's failed as demonstrably and comprehensively as Thames Water has failed, then the renationalisation has to be permanent. So basically what you're saying to the bill payers is, well, you know, because they've lost so much money and sent so much money abroad to shareholders and paid themselves such big fat cat salaries, we're now going to now have to administer it. But don't worry, we're going to privatise it again so they can carry on with the rip-off in a few months or a year or two's time. It's absolutely obscene.
Obscene it is indeed. And here's another little breaking news story this morning I picked up from Ireland. The Irish Independent are reporting that Sinn Féin, the party in the Republic, says it will empower pharmacists to write prescriptions under a new scheme if it is elected to power. Now, what's the problem with that, you might be asking? Well, what I'm wondering is if they can write prescriptions now, if they get signed off to write prescriptions now, why haven't they been able to write prescriptions for a long time, given the so-called pressure that the GPs are under at the minute? You know, it's very difficult. You have to get triaged now by a receptionist before you can even talk to a GP on the telephone now in Ireland. In most cases, and most people, excuse me, are making their way to accident and emergency if they actually do have a medical crisis. So now all of a sudden Sinn Féin want to empower pharmacists to write prescriptions and give general advice on, you know, basic day-to-day maladies. Why haven't they been able to do this for quite some time? Is the veneer cracking around what the importance of a GP actually is? Simply a conduit maybe to refer people to a specialist doctor in a hospital or simply a prescription writer?
Well, pharmacists were roped into giving people the injections, weren't they? Certainly in Britain, all sorts of completely unqualified people were sort of suddenly administering experimental injections to members of the general public. I mean, it was one of the most bizarre spectacles in living memory, frankly. Grandma suffers fatal seizure after pharmacy gave her medicine for other customer with similar name. Mother of two, Margaret Corcoran, 73, from Dublin, died at Talat University Hospital from a seizure linked to the wrong medicine being prescribed. The whole point as to why fully qualified doctors are the only people allowed to write prescriptions is because they're the only ones with, we hope, sufficient understanding of the complex problems suffered by the patient. You know, you can buy certain medications over the counter, but only very restricted ones. I think if pharmacists are allowed to write general prescriptions, this is open to abuse as well, frankly, because you don't need to do anything like the same sort of rigorous training to become a pharmacist as you do a doctor. And there are all sorts of exciting things available by prescription, which people break into pharmacies for, and which if you had a tame pharmacist on your side would mean that you could get those scripts written for you. I mean, in the wake of the synthetic opioid crisis in the United States, which is killing thousands of people a year, and the arrival on these shores, so I'm led to believe now, of synthetic opioids, then the last thing you would want to be doing for the safety of the public is making it easier for any Tom, Dick and Harry to basically issue these things legally.
This is true. This is true. And just to round this one off with a little bit of humour, remember the comic Jack D? He's went to the dogs recently, but when he started off, he was a little bit cutting edge, and he talked about, did a sketch once about dentists. He said dentists are simply doctors who began, didn't like the look of the full medical course, so ripped out the page on teeth and decided to specialise in that one instead. And pharmacists, he described, as just blokes standing behind a counter with long white coats on, putting pills into bottles. Why do you even need any qualifications to be able to do that? So I'm not dissing any pharmacists out there, but you know, he does kind of have a point. They just put pills in bottles and hand them over with a little docket. But maybe there's more to it than that. If we have any pharmacists listening, sorry if I've offended you, can come on and tell me what you actually do from 9 to 5 here. But they could be prescribing things in Ireland if Sinn Féin gets away. Basil, we've got to take a little pause now and welcome our first guest on Naughty O'Clock, but you'll be joining us again in the last 20 minutes of the show, all being well. And thank you so much for stepping into the fray this morning, covering for Gemma. Wonderful job, and we shall reconvene again in about 25 minutes' time. So please stay tuned for more here. Plenty more to come on TNT this morning. This is Rick Munn, and this is Locked and Loaded. Don't go away.
TNT's James Freeman.
Now that I'm sitting on the other side of the fence, I see the budget in a very different light. I find the discussions and leaks in the press in the weeks running up to the budget totally patronising. You know, will he, won't he give us some tax cuts? When the reality is that nothing in the budget will make any material difference to anyone, pretty much. That's usually the story. It is a game of musical chairs where the government giveth with one hand and taketh with the other. And we're all reminded about how little money that we've got left in our pockets.
James Freeman on today's News Talk TNT.
Military families often sacrifice precious time away from loved ones while serving our country. And for those with children, the separation can be especially difficult.
We were worried that with him leaving, that she would lose those connections with her dad.
Some of life's best moments happen between parents, children, and the pages of a good book. United Through Reading provides that connection.
You can watch your mom or dad read a book to you, and it almost feels like they're really there.
We ensure they remain a consistent, meaningful part of their children's lives, no matter the distance.
Just seeing Jacob recognize Daddy again after a long time just melted my heart.
And now, as we're facing greater isolation from our loved ones, United Through Reading is also available to veterans. Learn more about United Through Reading and download our free secure app at unitedthroughreading.org.
Are you sitting comfortably?
Oh, yes, yes.
Then I'll begin.
Even when you're just sitting around, we're rocking the talk.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, TNT, today's News Talk, and I'm happy to be joined for the first time this morning on Locked and Loaded on TNT by Nadia Clock. Nadia is the London Secretary of the Workers' Party of Great Britain, and she's on here today to talk a little bit about why the Workers' Party, why are so many people getting interested in running as candidates for the Workers' Party, and digging in a little bit to their manifesto to actually see what they're all about, see what they're actually hoping to achieve. So without any further ado, good morning and welcome to you, Nadia. How are you today?
Good morning, Rick. Thank you for having me. I've been with the Workers' Party for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I think it started when I was just disenchanted by both Labour and Tories. I felt like they just, from then, I felt like they really stood for the same thing. Since 1997, with Tony Blair's win in Labour, I really didn't feel it was the Labour Party anymore. I felt like an illegal invasion of Iraq didn't represent working class values and the values of the common people. And, you know, I failed to see anyone in the Commons who represents me politically. Mm. I don't want a war with Russia. I don't believe in conscription to fight a war against Russia when there's been no diplomacy. I don't believe in that gang warfare of NATO. I do not believe in what Israel's doing to the Palestinians as anything other than genocide. Mm. There's no one in Parliament who represents me. Mm-hmm. And that's probably why a lot of people have started to wake up and realise, well, okay, let's join something different, something new. Mm-hmm. And that's not uncommon. You know, I've lived in Holland for 7 years and they have many parties, many different parties. It's just not blue and red. There's many. So people should be open to the idea that you can vote for something else. You know, there's many things. We stand for the farmers. We stand for renationalisation of our major services. Yeah. Like, look what's happening with Thames Water. I mean, water is a vital source of life. You know, if that messes up, then
things can only go downhill. Yeah, that's true. Because I said if that messes up, we're going to be dead within 3 days because you can survive for, you know, 40, 50 days with no food. Or if you're like me and you're carrying about an extra 4 stone of fat, I could probably do about 3 months with no food.
I had a good Christmas too. Don't worry.
Good Christmas. Yeah. Much turkey was consumed. But anyway, I'm still paying off that Christmas food debt. But the point is you can't live for more than 3 days without water. You're going to dehydrate. Yeah. Interesting point you made there about Blair, also about this Ukraine-Russia war. You mentioned the word diplomacy, and one of the things that I've been saying since the start of that conflict, which is just past the second anniversary, is the first casualty in that conflict was actually diplomacy. It was the first thing to be murdered because Boris Johnson was dispatched to scupper any chance of a peaceful negotiation for peace 2 years ago that could have prevented us to get to the point that we're at now. And one of the things actually, jumping on this, just going with the flow here, one of the things that George Galloway posted up yesterday was about the Britain's now boasting about more billions being poured into Ukrainian aid when you look around you as a disenfranchised person and you say, well, this could have been going here. You know, it's not just a slap in the face.
I'm sorry to interrupt. We are struggling to put enough calories on our children. We've got food banks, queues. I can even show you in Harrow-Wealdstone, the queues are along the whole street. It is sickening. And even my father said, okay, I would have seen this around the rest of the country, but in London? Yeah, it's happening here. People think, we're multimillionaires in London. No, far from it.
The cost of living's biting a lot of people. And I mean, I cover news from all around the world here, especially in Australia, in Europe, in Ireland, in Britain. There's 10 cities now springing up that we covered about a 10th city springing up in Brisbane in the central business district. If you go into Dublin today, there's around about 1,000 men sleeping on the streets in tents with no sanitation because the doors have been open for people to flood into the country. A lot of illegal people entering illegally, I'm talking about here, with nowhere to go. Yeah. And the government knew that before they let them come into the country, knowing fine well they had nowhere to go. And they were literally given a tent sleeping bag on arrival. And some of them have been sleeping on the streets for the last three to four months. Like, what do they expect? What do they expect is going to happen as a result from that? And that's willful negligence or maybe engineered societal stress being brought on by our governments. And the same is true in the UK.
Yeah, exactly that. You know, what you've got people at the top making decisions for the common ordinary people. They haven't got any clue. They haven't got any common sense. I'm sorry. They, you know, working class values, it should be the main priority because these are your workers. These are the main people who are bringing the money in. They're working. And so when you ignore them, when you, you're just basically ignoring their needs and you're abusing them in a way. And what else do you have? Yeah, you've got your money in the corner. You've bought a 13-bedroom house. How many bedrooms can you be in at one time?
Exactly. The question needs to be asked as well, Nadia, why are they abusing these people? Is it because they're getting off on it? Or maybe, just maybe, there's money to be made in the abuse and the misuse of human beings coming into the UK and Ireland as well. That's something that I want to look at as well with you. We've actually got to take a little headline break, but when we come back at the other side, one of the things in the Workers' Party manifesto is that supports the call for a net zero referendum as soon as possible to create a national debate on who profits from these targets, profits from these targets, and on what terms. So as the saying goes, follow the money. So we're going to try and follow the money.
I'll tell you what happened to me. Yeah. I'll tell you what happened to me. We lost £10,000 buying a new car. We were supposed to spend that £10,000 on building a toilet for my little ones so they don't have to run upstairs all the time. Mm-hmm. Completely gone for a new ULS car. I can't tell you how many things are wrong with that car. Sadiq Khan has put pressure on normal working class people and even middle classes.
Well, you know what? hold on to that passion and that fieriness, and we're going to dump it on our listeners in about 30 seconds time, because I hear what you're saying, and there's a lot of people feeling exactly the same way because of these crazy banzai net zero policies that are being dumped on people at the height of a cost of living crisis. So we'll be right back after this short late headline break, and we're going to pick up on that at the other side here on TNT, Today's News Talk.
What's making news?
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Anger is mounting in Australia after the federal government rammed digital ID legislation through Parliament without a debate. Russian President Vladimir Putin has once again shot down fear-mongering claims in the West that Moscow's gearing up for a wider war in Europe. And tensions are rising between Paris and Washington, with the White House reportedly worried that French President Emmanuel Macron could soon trigger a clash with Russia.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio, or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Yes, indeed it is. Oh, a lot of, I don't know, a lot of frustration being released here this morning, I feel, with a lot of people. Nadia Clark has joined me this morning. She's the London Secretary of the Workers' Party of GB. Just during that little 30-second break, we were still going at it because we both have a lot to say. This is something that really grinds our gears. Nadia, you were saying you were away in Holland for 7 years. You've came back to the UK. You don't really recognise it from the place that it was that you left, and it's not any changes that are happening for the better, one of which that's really been this beast that's rising up over the last few years has been clean air zones, ULEZ zones. I can remember talking about them 2 years ago. Oxford had been trialled, Glasgow was trialled, London was trialled, a lot of places trialled, Birmingham was trialled. Now they seem to be bedding in here. So one of the points in your manifesto support the call for a net zero referendum as soon as possible to create a national debate on who profits from these. We will oppose ULEZ initiatives because of the cost they impose on working households and small businesses. And you have, just before the break, you were talking about you've had to spend money on changing a car to be ULEZ compliant at the expense of carrying out maybe work that needed to be done in your home for your kids. How can that be right?
Yeah, it's just the amount it's cost the ordinary person, Londoner, it's insane. Because the thing is, with ULEZ and being, you know, energy efficient, okay, if that's what the multi-billionaires want, let them put, you know, their money where their mouth is, put their hands deeper in their pocket and fish out the cash to subsidise, you know, ULEZ cars or what have you, electric cars. Why do we have to suffer? That's why Sadiq Khan, I'm sorry, he's part of the Labour Party, but doesn't represent the Labour people. Doesn't represent working class people at all.
And here's the thing, where's the consistency in this, right? So I'm talking about, I live just outside Belfast, Northern Ireland, so we don't have any ULEZ type schemes at all where I live.
Thank
There's
God
nothing anywhere close to me. Yeah, but the question is, why are Londoners, like Sadiq Khan is pushing ULEZ on the basis of it'll create cleaner air, it'll make things greener, it'll make Londoners live longer because they're not
breathing in pollutants. I'm a Londoner. I will tell you.
That's what he says, but it's bunkum.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. If you force me out of the car, or, you know, you want me to go to work via the public transport, the pollution on the tube is far, far greater than that outside on the street.
So where does he get his science from? You know, this is the whole problem here, Nadia. They're pushing agendas based on pseudoscience and faux science. So it'll clean up London, it'll clean up the air, it'll make it look better for all Londoners, and it'll be like this kind of a travelling utopia. That's not the case. There's no consistency with it. So, for example, in Glasgow, they're called clean air zones. In London, they're called ultra-low emission zones. But the bottom line is people are being financially penalised for for driving cars to get to work or to go to doctor's appointments or simply to cross town to visit loved ones. In the case of Oxford, you're now being given, what, 100 credits a year? You can pass certain zones 100 times in a year, but after that, you have to start paying for them. Where does that come from?
No, it's ridiculous. I mean, this is not... It doesn't make sense. What does make sense is that corruption has caused this. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Then you realize, okay, our institutions, the ones we believed in, the ones we trusted, the ones we had, you know, we were proud about, they've been corrupted. Mm-hmm. And the sovereignty's been compromised.
They have, and ultimately it's people like yourself are paying for this. I was in Bath last year, and there was a lady had to get a taxi to take me to the airport, and she was informing that she had to change her taxi to be compliant with Bath's clean air zones. Now, she told me this. She said, if I was just a commercial or a private vehicle owner, I don't have to be compliant, but because I'm a commercial vehicle owner, i.e. a taxi driver, I had to upgrade my car. But if it was just a normal, I was just a normal citizen not working, I wouldn't have to do that. So again, even in Bath, and this is straight from somebody, you know, a taxi driver's mouth, who I happened to be in conversation with last June, she said, well, you know, I'm being penalized effectively. This is my job. This is what I use to earn money to put food on the table for my kids. And I'm being zeroed in on and being extra penalized for that. And she was like you, she had to shell out a lot of extra money to have a compliant car.
Well, the issue also there, big companies, protocols and procedures, and protocols and procedures and import from the USA, it's not with common sense. It's there to protect the company. It doesn't have any common sense. It doesn't care about the workers. It doesn't care about the ordinary person. You just have to abide by our rules. That's the problem. Protocols and procedures, a lot of them have to be put in the bin. You have to use common sense, and that's what's lacking.
And we're not seeing our so-called leaders leading by example. So while they're pushing for ULEZ zones and they're pushing for reduced carbon emissions, it doesn't stop them from hopping into private jets and
cruising
around London in armored Land Rovers or whatever it is that Sadiq Khan uses to get around. I'm pretty sure he doesn't use the tube, does he?
After we won, I haven't seen him use the tube. After we won in Rochdale, Rishi Sunak flew all the way from Aberdeen straight to London. I wonder what vehicle he used to do that.
Yeah,
just to warn the nation about the Workers' Party and George Galloway.
He certainly didn't cycle down from Aberdeen, I would think. And that's what the Irish are trying to do as well. We have a lunatic green politician here called Eamon Ryan. And Eamon Ryan wants to put everybody on the bikes to cycle to work. And one of the objections was Ireland isn't exactly known for its tropical weather. Okay, most of the year it's dark, grey, windy and wet. And he claims that only 8 days a year, you would only get wet 8 days a year if you were cycling to work in Ireland. I don't know what this guy's on. Yeah, but he's serious. That's what he's trying to pitch to the Irish people. Obviously, that's not going to work because people can see through it. Another thing that I want to pick up on with you, Nadia, one of the points in this manifesto is to do with the personal tax threshold. So one of the things that you guys would do would be immediately increase the personal tax threshold for the poorest paid, removing tax entirely for the first 21,000 odd pounds of wages for 2 million low paid workers, and at the same time commit to a one-off wealth tax on all estates valued fairly over 10 million quid. And as we can see, or as we have seen over the last 3 years, in fact, over the last 300 years, the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. And people, I don't think, realize in the UK just how much tax they're paying. You pay tax, income tax on your wages. You pay national insurance on it. When you go and buy food in the supermarket, you're paying VAT on it. There's fuel duty on it. Even if you insure your car, you have to pay insurance premium taxes. And then if you die, if your estate's worth over a certain amount of money, you pay inheritance tax on that. What can you do? I mean, everywhere you turn, the tax man's waiting to scalp a pound of flesh off your body.
Yeah, and the worst is, what are they doing with that money? They're not doing anything with the NHS. They're not doing anything with the water. So what are they doing it? Yeah, it's corruption of the highest degree. And
so,
Well,
to answer that question, because we don't have a lot of time left, okay, the NHS is a big one.
Well,
you know, over the last... Well, the management, exactly. There's certainly too many chiefs and not enough Indians, as they say, too many upper tier managers in there or middle managers that aren't really contributing anything to the NHS. It's not a fact so much that it's underfunded, because people are always banging on about there's not enough money in the NHS. It's being squandered and it's being wasted by the so-called people that are supposed to be leading it. So you guys, let's say, technically speaking, you guys have great success. You guys get in and can do something about the NHS. What do you do?
Yeah, you have to look at every single hospital specifically and see what the problems are. And if there's too many middle management, and you have to get rid of them. You need more doctors, you need more nurses, and you get rid of that cost-cutting protocol and procedures. As I said, the protocols and procedures is there to protect the business, not to protect the patient. You know, the nurse is probably thinking, oh, I need a lot of, you know, a plaster on that patient. But because of protocols and procedures, I can only use that much. No, the aim of your game is to heal the patient. Then cost cutting comes naturally in the long term. It comes.
It does. I'm promoting a healthy lifestyle, because can you remember during the so-called lockdown years over the last, 3 or 4 years, there was no push for people to take more accountability, to eat more healthy, to get out and exercise a little bit more. It was go to your doctor, get your injection, and if you do go to the hospital, we might ventilate you or stick you on midazolam. Prevention is better than cure. There's no preventative message being pumped out by the NHS at the minute. There really isn't. A little token here and there saying, take care of yourself, but by and large, they would rather treat you for whatever you have wrong with you rather than prevent you from getting sick in the first place.
There was, after World War II, and even during World War II, we had a Ministry of, I believe, Food and Health. And that made sure every Briton, every child had enough protein, enough carbs, the certain things that we needed. Now, that was removed. It was, it was finished. And I really believe, personally, I believe that we should bring something like that again. You know, we need guidance on what to eat, how to eat, according to what's been written in the Lancet, what's the, you know, the right way to go about things.
Yeah, more activity, more healthy eating and less sedentary lifestyles.
Guidance.
Because that's something that's being encouraged as well. Sedentary, stuck in front of your screen all day. Get out, get some fresh air, get some exercise. Listen, we could talk about a lot of other points here, but we can't, because we're out of time, and time is our
enemy
here.
That's unfortunate. I would have loved to.
Well, no, we can talk again for sure, but I just want to direct people your way. You can follow the Workers' Party on Twitter or X, if you use that platform, at Workers' Party GB. That's on the X or Twitter platform. And their website is workerspartybritain.org, where you can go on there, have a look at what they're about, and register if you have an interest in standing for the Workers' Party in the upcoming elections. And they don't just let anybody in. There is a vetting process, but they have a lot of interest at the minute. And for good reasons. There's a lot of disenfranchised, disgruntled people out there at the minute that simply want to see change. So, Nadia, thank you so much for coming on this morning and speaking so
passionately about the
issues that are affecting you. It's been a pleasure. We've got to take a break now. And when we come back at the other side, we're joined by Basil Valentine, TNT's political editor. So don't go away. Stay tuned for more here. We'll be right back.
I'm CAL FIRE Battalion Chief Isaac Sanchez. And normally we like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourselves and your family safe during wildfires. But given the historic impacts that the weather has had on our state this year, we would like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourself safe during extreme weather. If you reside in an area susceptible to flooding, please take the necessary steps to prepare to evacuate if advised. Make sure you've identified at least 2 exit routes out of your neighborhood, as one of them may be blocked or flooded. As the weather develops, remember to check in on vulnerable neighbors and family members. They may need additional time to prepare for evacuation. And just like during a wildfire, if you feel unsafe, please evacuate. You don't have to wait for the order to come. Keep an emergency go bag ready in case you need to evacuate. And always remember to plan for the safety of your pets as well. If you must leave, never drive around roadblocks. It can take as little as 12 inches of water to sweep your vehicle away. And always remember the mantra, turn around, don't drown. Be aware of first responders working in highly impacted areas, especially on the roads. For additional safety tips and updates on CAL FIRE activities, follow us on social media or visit fire.ca.gov.
I tell my son, I love you every single day. Now, my dad has never said that to me. Not because he doesn't love me, but because culturally it wasn't comfortable for him. Now that he's a grandfather, he says, "I love you" to my son every time he sees him. My advice to all the fathers out there, forget the cultural restrictions. They grow up way too fast for you to waste even a single precious moment.
You're with Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, indeed. Just acknowledgement first and foremost to everybody that's currently inhabiting the live chat, the denizens of the TNT live chat this morning. Never let us down. Just a shout out to Vintage Vanessa, Mug that's in there, Skippy's in there, Holly is in there, Little Carl is in there, Max Bliss is in there, Mark Parkinson, I is in there, Hidden Truth is in there, Dud is in there, Red is in there. I don't want to miss anybody out here. If I have, I apologize, but there's so many of you and the messages are all flying past here. So maybe I'll pick up on a few of them when we come back at the start of the second hour, because it's very intense this morning and we're trying to squeeze as much content in as we can. So keep the comments coming. And a lot of people agreeing with what Nadia said in the last hour, especially in regards to that little viper, Sadiq Khan, and his hypocrisy in London. Landon, mate, Landon in it. But anyway, enough of my dodgy Cockney accents. It's time to welcome Basil Valentine back into the fray again. Basil, how are you doing today?
Very well, thank you, Rick. Good to see you again. I just want to finish off very quickly about the whole Thames Water farrago, the catastrophe. £72 billion. That's how much has been taken out of the water industry. It isn't an industry, it's a utility. That's how much money has gone into the pockets of shareholders and the salaries of the fat cats since privatization. 72 billion that would solve all the water problems in Britain many times over. Absolutely obscene that we have tons of sewage dumped in our rivers and 72 billion taken out. You know, words fail me, Rick, really, on this one.
Yeah, it just seems to be what are they not capable of doing? Rather than asking what your government's capable of doing, I think the question has to be now, what are they not capable of doing? There's a story here, one of the ones we've selected to just look at here this morning, to do with Peter Mandelson. The Labour peer says there's little desire among voters for a referendum and in Brussels for renegotiations on rejoining the EU. The headline reads, "You've got to be joking." Mandelson dismisses prospect of UK rejoining EU, especially under the Labour Party. What do you think about this one, Baz? Are we going to go back into the EU again, or is he going to get a referendum? What do you think this is going to happen here?
Well, it was such a thumping victory for Leave last time round that I think Mandelson thinks that it would just be a vote loser and a huge distraction, really. I mean, it's the last thing we need to do, really, rehash all that only a few years, really, after leaving. So I think he's probably right about that. 10 years plus time, we might see something very different. But it's not as if the European Union is some paragon of virtue, some model of democratic values or anything. I was asked yesterday by James Freeman to summarize the benefits of Brexit, and I can do so in four words. Ursula von der Leyen. At least we are nothing to do with that dreadful woman. She cannot claim to speak for anyone in Britain.
No, she's a real piece of work, is our Ursula. And just actually, Mandelson here, who is a Labour peer, former EU trade commissioner and advisor to Starmer, said rejoining the 27-country bloc would require a referendum that UK voters had little desire for, basically what you're saying there. And in his words, Basil, he says, "I can't see the British people running towards a referendum for love nor money. After we went through during the last one, I really don't think that people are going to run towards a repeat of that experience," he told a British Chamber of Commerce event at Heathrow Airport just last night. So, yeah, there doesn't seem to be any appetite for that. I don't think it's something we're going to have to worry about anytime soon.
I mean, absolutely. I do think we've got to sort out the whole trade arrangements, though, because for anybody who tries to buy anything from the European Union or sell anything to the European Union, we've got these huge customs duties and import taxes these days. In fact, there are quite a lot of companies based in the EU, who will not send goods to the United Kingdom. It's as if we were on the moon or something. You go to the drop-down menu to select UK, and then the carriage charges, and United Kingdom isn't there. So you email them only to discover, no, we're not exporting to the UK at this time, you know. So the big problems there, and I know people with small businesses who've seen their trade absolutely decimated as a result of restrictions on exports of foodstuffs and things like that. So, you know, we're out of the political union. I'm very glad about that. But it does seem a bit ridiculous that we don't have some kind of more, you know, simpler trade arrangement with the rest of the EU.
It would make you, well, you would think, wouldn't you? But then again, this is Britain that we're talking about here. And of course, one of the things, what else we've highlighted just on the back of speaking with Nadia, just before you came on there, we were talking about some of the things that George Galloway has been saying recently. A good point that he makes that you highlight was to do with investment or more funding, not invest. Well, I suppose it is investment indirectly, more money going to Ukraine. The British government is boasting about that one. There was a tweet you highlighted about that 1.5 billion to Ukraine, obviously done in a very fancy graphic with the old yellow and blue in the background there. He makes a good point, doesn't he, does our George? As you shiver, your children go hungry, struggle to make ends meet, realm sinks into dereliction. You've told the government there's no money, but this is where your money's actually going.
Absolutely outrageous. And as you say, it's sort of done with this flashy graphic that could come from a Marvel comic or something, you know. And what on earth benefit is this to the people of Britain? Putin has just this morning said in a major speech, an announcement that is being widely reported, he has no intention of attacking any NATO countries. Simple as that. So a lot of the justification for this funding for Ukraine is on the entirely spurious notion that somehow he's the new Hitler and will be in Paris if he isn't stopped in Ukraine. Utter nonsense. The sooner this war is brought to an end, the better. It's a blight economically on Europe and simply a meat grinder for the youth of Russia and Ukraine. But it's supported by the Uni Party. Starmer is now making an attempt to sort of, you know, rebrand himself, I suppose. I think he must have a new speechwriter because he says that the month of May will mark the beginning of the end of the Tory era of politics as performance art. Starmer is due to say this at the launch of Labour's local election campaign, and he's accusing ministers of having utterly failed on the so-called levelling up agenda. The Labour Party are launching their local elections campaign in the West Midlands, which is seen as a sign that Labour hopes the big shift in its polls since the last parallel set of elections could see it remove the high-profile Conservative mayor of the West Midlands, Andy Street, as well as, of course, see them regain seats in the traditional industrial heartlands. Big elections on the 2nd of May in Britain, and they could well spell the end of Sunak's time in Downing Street.
May's going to be a big one. Before we move past that Ukrainian 1.5 billion, this was a post, by the way, the original post was put up by the Foreign, Commonwealth and Development Office of the UK, actually telling us that they were working through the World Bank. The UK has helped unlock 1.5 billion of new lending to Ukraine. So it's a loan that's being given to Ukraine. The funding will help provide essential services, reaching 13 million Ukrainians, helping them build a strong, free and prosperous country. And of course, the old hashtag is under there, Stand With Ukraine. You know, what does that even mean, stand with Ukraine? Is it fly a flag in your window or put a little flag in your profile picture? You heard a lot of people saying they stood with Ukraine, but none of them were bringing in the so-called refugees that were piling in. That House Ukrainian scheme fell flat on its face. And in fact, very few people volunteered. Remember, Liz Truss gave a call to arms if any mercenaries were out there in the UK that they could make their way over to Kiev and fight Mother Russia. It wasn't a big take up on that. And anybody that did probably ended up dead. So it's all fine saying to stand with Ukraine in a hashtag, but the reality of it is nobody's actually doing it physically, Basil. At least none of these virtue signalers with their little yellow and red or yellow and blue flags.
Yeah, exactly. What do these things mean anymore? Should we not all be calling for an end to this war as quickly as possible? That was another of George Calloway's recent posts on X, that there seems to be a uniparty move towards a permanent demi-war, is the way he described it, with Russia, with China, with anybody else that they can get their hands on, really. And it flies in the face of what used to be called responsible statecraft, which is the exercise of diplomacy, such that when you got in a situation like we're in now, the diplomats would all scurry around in a bid to improve relations as quickly as possible, to avoid confrontation. We heard in the headlines there on the half hour that, in fact, Washington is getting extremely hot under the collar about the prospect of Macron wanting to send troops to Ukraine, thereby provoking possible direct confrontation. We've got to have de-escalation. Things have been moving in very much the wrong direction, Rick.
Yeah, one of the other things, a word that's not used very often these days, Basil, is diplomacy. And I think one of the first casualties in that Ukraine-Russia special operations was diplomacy. It was the first casualty in that war. It was bypassed completely. You remember, they went straight to sanctioning. Russia is sanctioning bank accounts, SWIFT transfers, causing all sorts of stress, trying to destabilize them financially. And of course, for a brief period, you remember back in February, March 2022, Joe Biden at one stage was celebrating that the ruble was losing its value fast, but it rebounded pretty damn quick after 2 or 3 months. And now, arguably, Russia's in a much better financial position, at least, on paper economically, than UK or the US.
Yes, and certainly the anecdotal evidence from people who visit Russia is that it's a flourishing society. We've reported this morning that the UK officially went into recession in the second half of 2023, 0.1% drop in GDP in the third quarter, 0.3% drop in the fourth quarter. We are still in the first quarter of 2024. And while the surveys of firms show some slight recovery, that may yet be downgraded. Sunak, of course, is pinning all his hopes on an economic recovery this year. Otherwise, he and his government are even more doomed than they already look. But yes, all the attempts to destroy the Russian economy have backfired, particularly on the Germans, of course.
One last story, Basil, I think, to take us up to the top of the hour here as well. This is a story that just came out last night. Record numbers of migrants crossing the channel in 2024. And again, of course, one of the Sunak's promises at the beginning of 2023 was that he would stop the small boats, he would stop all this happening, he would cut inflation by half, he would do all sorts of things. Well, in terms of that aim to stop the small boats, as he calls them, the number of migrants who arrived in the UK after crossing the channel has reached a record high for the first 3 months of a calendar year. According to the Provisional Home Office figures, 338 people arrived in 7 boats on Tuesday, taking the year's total to 4,644. The previous record for arrivals January to March was set in 2022 with 4,548. So Sunak is breaking records at the minute, but unfortunately they're the wrong records. They're actually record-breaking numbers of people coming in small boats, which is something that he pledged to stop or eradicate altogether.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no, as the policies stand at the moment, with boats effectively being escorted from the middle of the channel to British shores, and then the arrivals put up in hotels, what possible incentive is there not to come? 1,000 Africans have additionally landed in the last couple of days on the Italian island of Lampedusa, and a lot of them make their way north to the channel coast, to come across to Britain, because the government has no effective policy to deal with illegal migration at the moment. It's as simple as that. All the talks with France have yielded absolutely nothing at all. But we understand and respect the fact that the Royal National Lifeboat Institute have a duty of care to anybody in peril on the seas. You know, there's got to be a balance struck, hasn't there, between humanitarianism and, you know, what is the point of having a navy if it doesn't protect the borders? You know, Britain was supposed to be queen of the seas and all the rest of it, you know, going back 500 years. You know, we've just got no effective border at all in Britain.
No, we don't. And actually, the units that are set up to try and protect the border, for example, the Royal Navy or Border Force or Border Force, as it's also known, or even the RNLI, are effectively being used as water taxis now. They're picking up people at the halfway point in the channel and ferrying them back over to the shores of the UK, where they're then being taken on to forward accommodation. So that's being they're facilitating this rather than actually preventing it. But of course, they're just carrying out orders, as the saying goes. But this is just off the back of Prime Minister Rishi Sunak continued to insist his plan was to stop the boats. It's working, even though crossings in 2024 are tracking ahead of recent years. So it's all talk and no action, all mouth and all that business. But he can talk the talk, but he certainly can't walk the walk. That's fishy, Rishi Sunak. So got to take a brief pause, Basil. We've got to have a news break, and then we'll be back at the other side with more Unlocked and Loaded. Neil McAvoy will be joining me, leader of Propel Wales, and also Joe Allen will be on the show from Tennessee, talking about transhumanism, AI, and deep fakery. And Basil, of course, doing some headlines at the other side as well. Don't go away. Stay tuned for more here on TNT. Today's News Talk.